And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
Okay.
That's good. Okay is, is that an improvement from yesterday? I think so.
Yeah, it's, I don't, right at this moment, it doesn't seem like it is, but, whatever. The amputation is on the table now.
Well, that's not good. Let's try to avoid the amputation. Ian Safar, how we doing? What's going on?
Oh, doing good. A little tired today. Late one watching the, Panthers.
Yep.
Take down the Oilers, but doing great, thanks.
Yep, late one last night, and Joe, I just can't help myself when the Stanley Cup is being awarded. I just sit there and I watch the whole thing and the cup getting passed around, and you know, finally when they started handing it off to like individual family members last night, I probably said, "All right, that's probably good enough. I can probably go to sleep now," but the Florida Panthers get it done again, and they win their second consecutive Stanley Cup. And Matthew Tkachuk calling him a dynasty last night. We can get into that maybe a little bit later in the show. But just a clinic put on by Florida last night. And Sam Reinhart was awesome. He had four goals in the game last night. And it was clear early, Joe, after they got that first one, and certainly after they got the second one, that it was just going to be such an uphill climb for Edmonton to get that win. And when Florida really locks it in and locks it down, they're just almost impossible to beat. And that's what they did last night. They had everybody going. You know, it could have been worse than what it was. They had a couple of really good looks that either they just missed the net on or Skinner made some good saves on. And then Skinner, later in the game, just made some bad decisions in net. So you factor in all those things, Joe, and Florida, a very worthy champion and a team that, and you look at their makeup right now, I'm not sure they're going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I think when going into this series, I think we both picked Edmonton. I think at one point you're like, you know, I'm probably going to end up looking stupid for picking Edmonton. And that's how I feel right now. Florida's just flat out better. Florida really dominated a big portion of this series, really. It doesn't always work out that the clear best team or the better team in a series outweighs the best individual, but two straight years, that's the case. So congrats to Florida Dynasty, a little early, but well, you win two in a row, and certainly you now have the start, right? I mean, what do we qualify if they get another one in the next 3 years?
I'd say so. Like the Blackhawks won three and six, right? And I consider that a dynasty. I think you have to get to three for me for the dynasty word to kind of be thrown out there. Now I will say in this case, they have won two and they have gone to another final during that time. Same thing as Tampa. So yeah, I guess you can debate that if you want to, but I always kind of start with you need to win three, and then that's where the dynasty conversation starts.
Red Wings, 4-12.
Yes, for sure.
Their finals.
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that we all agree. Thank you. Thank you. 3-7, I guess. 4-12. Yeah, so they're on the way. And, you know, it does bring me, Robbie, to what we talked about with Sean Rourke yesterday. I mean, I have to, like, immediately go back to this. I'm not sure I totally agreed with him. I mean, I totally hear what he's saying. Like, the outcome of this series, like, he's the best player in the world still, right?
Yeah.
And I do think, and I've railed against this many times, the ring counting as your ultimate bottom line on everything, I think is faulty logic. But also, man, you look at his overall performance in this series, and I gotta say, like, I mean, I think the guy does need to win a championship, and he needs to, you know, he had an overall great playoff, but he left me wanting a little bit more. And again, I give Florida tons of credit for that too, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just, you know, he's going to sit there and point at Connor McDavid and say, do more. But still, like, these moments are when you want to see the best player in the world rise up a little bit more than he did, I think.
I would agree. I think he certainly, especially from a goal-scoring department, like, you know, he still, especially early in the series, made a lot of plays and was distributing the puck, and that's a big part of his game. But you wanted to see more from the goal-scoring part of it. And I agree with you. Like, I think the ring counting probably gets overblown in sports. It's also not nothing. Like, I don't think you can just totally ignore it either. And the bottom line is, like, he is going to be an all-time great player. I've said it before. McDavid is the greatest hockey player that I have ever seen play. Now, I also remind people that, you know, I was not old enough to watch, like, prime Mario Lemieux or prime Wayne Gretzky. Like, I wasn't around for those guys. So, in my generation, McDavid is the best player I've ever seen. But I do think when it's all said and done, when you're going to be compared to Crosby and you're going to be compared to Lemieux and Gretzky and all those guys, like, championships are a part of it. And I'm not saying that, like, he has to win more championships than Gretzky to be better than Gretzky, or win more championships than Crosby to be better than Crosby. But I do think you have to win one, right? Like, you got to find your way in there in that discussion when you're one of these all-time great players. And, you know, look, he's still got plenty of hockey left. I still believe at some point, whether it's in Edmonton or elsewhere, he's going to break through and he's going to win. I do think that's going to happen at some point. But I will say, you look at his career, and this was what, his 11th year already, his 11th season? I mean, how much of his top level does he have left? I think he's got a good while at it left, but it's not forever. Like, there's a window here, and, you know, all offseason long, Joe, and we'll have plenty of time to discuss this, but I just threw the tweet out there last night. If you're any other team in the league right now, how much do you kind of have one eye on, hey, is he going to sign an extension this offseason? Like, is he – because I've made my position on it clear. If I was him, I would not. I would take it down to the last possible second and leave every option on the table. That's what I would do. I don't know that he's going to operate that way, but I can tell you that almost every eyeball in the NHL this offseason, Joe, is going to be wondering, you know, if they get to training camp and he's not gotten an extension with Edmonton yet, that's all people are going to talk about next year.
That's the thing. Do you want that distraction? I mean, obviously what you want is, you know, do you want to be there, or do you want to be elsewhere? It will be, like you said, it will be the dominant story until something's resolved on that, you know.
Yeah.
Which can be a giant distraction. It's going to be fascinating. If you're him, I'm sure you could look around and you could think about different guys you like to play with or different places you'd like to be. Also, you did just, you know, make the Stanley Cup final 2 years in a row with your current outfit. So it's not like things are going that badly. So you keep that in mind, too. Just get rid of Corey Perry. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. No more Corey Perry. Like, if you're a crappy team in this league, you should want him. But if you're a team that actually thinks you can win it, you need to stay the hell away from him.
You need to find a way to make sure you're playing against him in the final, apparently. You know?
Well, that's right.
I know it's Corey Perry, and it's kind of hard to feel bad for him. I do kind of feel bad for him. I mean, it's pretty hard to lose 5 cup finals in a row. I mean, he's been to 5 out of the last 6 overall. But being a guy that lost 5 in a row is pretty insane. I remember, like, Marian Hossa. He was with Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh lost, and then he went to Detroit and was with Detroit when Pittsburgh beat Detroit, and then he finally the next year went to Chicago and won. But I was like, man, this guy's like the reverse Midas touch out there.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. It's like he's added, like, it's like a couple years extra on his career. Like, all right, bro, thank you. You know, Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas. You know, they only lost 4 in a row. So
it's true.
Congrats to Corey Perry. I don't feel bad for him at all. Not one bit.
I don't think a whole lot of people around here do. I think it may just be me that's like, that kind of sucks, man. But, you know, maybe if you're a Predators fan, that's what you take solace in last night. Not a very good Stanley Cup final for Matthias Ekholm. And I will be interested to see what comes out about like exactly where he was with his health, because I mean, just some mistakes, especially in the last two games, that you don't see him make very often. And I mean, last night he makes a bad pass to Bouchard on the first goal, and Bouchard kind of fumbles the puck a little bit, and then Ekholm has a chance to kill the play in the middle of the ice, and he just whiffs. Like, he whiffs on the puck and doesn't take the body, and then Reinhart scores an incredible goal to put him up 1-0. But just some mistakes from Ekholm that you don't see him make a whole lot. So I'll be interested to see what comes out about exactly where he is from his health part of it. Like, you know, Matthew Tkachuk was talking about, you know, his, like, abductor being torn off his bone last night. So there's a lot of things that are going to come out in the next couple of days here about what guys we're trying to play through. And then, of course, you know, beyond McDavid, Joe, the other storyline for Edmonton is going to be, what about their goalie? Like, is Stuart Skinner going to be their goalie next year, or do they have to come up with plan B, which I think they do, heading into this offseason? And if you're, I mean, if you're Jared, you could throw in the UC Soros part of that too.
I was just going to say, how would you like 8 years of UC Soros, Edmonton Oilers, for a low, low price?
Oh, man, maybe so. Hey, get in there. Worth the phone call.
Yeah, sure. Johnny's very excited there. Dancing chipmunks, dancing, is that Peppermint Patty? No, yeah, no, it's not Peppermint Patty. Dancing Elmo. Very excited about this. Congrats, Johnny.
Yes, very, very much so. I mean, just congrats to Florida. They're a really, really good team. And like I said, I don't think they're going anywhere. Like, I think they're going to find a way to bring Sam Bennett back. And I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens with Marchand, because he's such a great fit down there. I do think he's going to get a lot of offers in the offseason as well. So, like, how does he prioritize what exactly he's looking for is going to be really interesting. But, I mean, look, I would not be surprised at this point, even though it's a really, really, really difficult thing to do, if Florida's back in the final next year for the fourth consecutive year. I mean, they are – I heard Elliot Friedman talking about this, and I totally agree. Like, when you think about the teams that have won multiple championships in a short period of time in the NHL over the last few years, whether that's Pittsburgh in 16-17 or Tampa recently, now Florida, like, I would love to go back and just have like the Kings earlier, the Blackhawks, have a tournament between all those teams and see which one would come out on top. You know, we get prisoner of the moment all the time, and there have been some teams that have won championships on those teams that are probably have more star power than this Panthers one does. You'd be hard pressed, in my opinion, Joe, to find a deeper one. Like, there's zero weakness on this Panthers team, zero.
I agree, but I'll still take Tampa's best. Yeah. In this run against them, that's what I'd put my money on.
Yeah, I think it's a great debate. Like, I Tampa would probably be my pick as well. Yeah, but then again, like, you know, how about prime Blackhawks? Like, those are pretty good too. There's a lot you could choose from when it comes to that discussion. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Your reaction to the Florida Panthers winning consecutive Stanley Cups, wrapping that up last night against the Edmonton Oilers. We'll get more of your thoughts on that. Plus, an update on the Predators captain yesterday that is potentially concerning heading into next year. And we'll revisit some of our Predators conversation from yesterday as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Down to the final 5 seconds. Rats rain down. Lord Stanley staying in South Florida. Last year was greatness. This time it's historic. The Florida Panthers are back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. The Panthers have done it in 6 games. They take down the Edmonton Oilers. The Panthers have gone back-to-back in 24 and 25.
Glorious, beautiful, remarkable, and undeniable. The Panthers at the top of the hockey mountain for the second year in a row, Stanley Cup champions.
The Florida Panthers have etched their names in hockey history.
That was a final call last night as the Panthers wrap up consecutive Stanley Cup championships, and they've been in the final 3 years in a row. And, boy, they don't look like they're slowing down anytime soon. Taking your thoughts on the Stanley Cup last night and the Predators moving forward, 615-737-1025. Michael in Madison says, I'm going to be completely delusional and believe that this cup final loss means the end of Connor McDavid's time in Edmonton, and foolishly think that the Predators have a chance of acquiring him. Some other people on YouTube are like, McDavid to Nashville. It's happening. Step one, complete. Joe, as I pointed out in the YouTube chat, I have heard that Connor McDavid does like country music, and there's visual evidence that apparently Nathan McKinnon met up with Jelly Roll after the Jelly Roll concert the other night. So that McDavid-McKinnon duo in Nashville could be pretty special.
That'd be pretty good, you know. I mean, that's you know, you center a couple lines there, put them together, maybe, you know.
A lot of options.
Great for the power play. I like it. Anybody who likes country music, I say that the Preds have a chance. But seriously, every market in the NHL should at least utter it, right? Should at least dream about getting McDavid.
As I respond, look. If he doesn't have an extension signed by the time he comes back into camp with Edmonton next year, every market will start to dream about signing Connor McDavid. So that, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how that part of it plays out. Joe, an update on Roman Josi. So I saw this yesterday from SwissHockeyNews.ch, and they were kind of putting together and aggregating a story that came from Blick, which is a Swiss-German newspaper, where apparently Josi did an interview, and he talked about a condition that he's been dealing with since he had his concussion last year, got hit by Sam Bennett, and missed the rest of the season for the Predators. He's been apparently diagnosed with postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, more commonly referred to as POTS, and as Swiss Hockey News points out, this is kind of a situation that it's an abnormally large increase in heart rate upon standing up or sitting up. There's a bunch of different symptoms that come with it that include headaches, which was apparently what Roman Josi was dealing with, obviously in the aftermath of the concussion. And he thought maybe that something was wrong with his brain. Got a checkup in Denver, and that's where this diagnosis came from. Now, Josi, in this article here, and again, this has been translated, so sometimes things get either kind of lost in translation or sound a little weirder in translation, but here's what it says from that piece from Blick. Quote, over the last 8 weeks, I've undergone intensive therapy, which also included taking beta blockers. I've been feeling much better since then. I've regained the belief that I'll be 100% fit again and can fully attack with Nashville and the Swiss national team next winter. So, Joe, I mean, obviously that's concerning. It also kind of answers some questions. I remember at the end of the season, Josi, he had his media availability. And at some point, you know, we talked about the concussion, and he never outright said he had a concussion, but he was like, basically, you guys know what it is. But at the end of it, like, I remember him getting asked about, like, if they were in playoff contention, if the playoffs were going on right now, could he play? And his answer was no. He's like, no, I cannot play right now. And I remember us talking about that, Joe, and being deeply concerned about that, because obviously we thought it was stemming from the concussion. And now I think maybe it wasn't really the concussion that it was stemming from. It may have been this and him dealing with POTS and just not knowing it at the time. So, you know, he says he believes he'll be back to being 100% fit again. But, you know, I loosely know some people that deal with this and know that it can be pretty challenging. So we'll be something to monitor on the Roman Josi front.
Yeah, I guess you'd rather it be something else other than a concussion that lingers that long after he's had several of them at his age. You'd probably pick this, but you're still not picking this if you have a choice, right?
Right.
I mean, this could still be a real challenge for him. And not getting any younger, but at least he found an answer, because I'm sure that was for him, again, who's gone through a few of those. I'm sure it was very alarming. This must have been way, the headaches might have been different too or whatever, but like way longer after the injury to be dealing with it. And then you have to be wondering, like, okay, so is this just a more severe concussion, or do I just not recover from them as well? So, I mean, at least it's It's good to have it diagnosed.
It's good to have it diagnosed, and hopefully he can manage it well. But, you know, as I said, I mean, it's something that he's going to have to deal with, and he's talked about the therapy that he's gone through and the beta blockers and how much that's made him feel better. So hopefully, you know, we all have been around Roman Josi. We love Roman Josi. So hopefully, you know, he's able to kind of get through this and continue to play at a high level. But, you know, most importantly, like his long-term health, we've talked about that, both with this and kind of this diagnosis now that apparently he's got. And also, like, you still – I mean, he still has racked up some of these concussions here. So, moving forward here, just going to be very interesting to see how he monitors it, how the Predators monitor it, and, I mean, really hoping that this is the last time that he's dealing with any sort of concussion stuff, because, Joe, he had several early in his career to the point where I remember some of the conversation around here. He got a 7-year deal, and some of the conversation was, wow, he's making $4 million a year on a 7-year deal, and he's had like 2 or 3 concussions so far. That's a pretty risky move by David Poile. It ended up being one of the greatest contracts they've ever signed, and it worked out really well. But now, over the last few years, some more concussions have entered the mix, and that's always a scary thing.
Yeah, no question. You know, it's I mean, look, you just take some huge hits in this game. I think people sometimes underestimate the collision nature of hockey. And, you know, you can take, I mean, as a defenseman, you can take 3 or 4 hits in a game that I would say would rival what some, you know, NFL players go through in a game. And you're playing, and even if not, you're talking about 82 versus 17.
Right.
I mean, it's a high concussion sport, despite what Gary Bettman has said before in the past.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into our Predators discussion from yesterday. What exactly do the Predators have to do this offseason to get back to being competitive? How much turnover is needed? How much improvement is needed? We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to the Preds Beer Festival at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday, June the 28th. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to the Preds Beer Festival at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday, June the 28th. Joe, speaking of the Preds, we had a really interesting discussion yesterday, and we appreciate the participation from our listeners. More of that welcome at 615-737-1025. What do the Predators have to do to be competitive? Is there a feasible, realistic path this offseason to getting them back to being competitive? And again, as I said yesterday, I'm not talking about scraping into the last spot of the playoffs and getting beaten 5 games in the first round. I'm talking about, is there a spot with this group, with a goalie that you've signed with an 8-year contract that kicks in next year, winners in Stamkos and Marchessault and O'Reilly and Josi and all these guys, is there a realistic path this offseason, coming off a year where you finished 30th in the league, where you can get back to being competitive in terms of actually being a threat to win next year? And, Joe, as we sit here today, it seems like an incredibly lofty thing, doesn't it? I mean, you just finished 30th in the league. You know, we just went through, you know, some health concerns now with Roman Josi that you're talking about. An age of the roster, when you're talking about contributing players, that is pretty high when you start talking about, you know, mid-30-year-olds in the forward group, and Yossi's not getting any younger, and you know, Saros is still in the prime of his career, but the numbers haven't gone well over the last couple of years. What exactly has to happen this offseason? Joe, do you see a realistic path at all to that being the case next year in a league where sometimes you do see some dramatic swings from year to year? Could that happen with the Nashville Predators next year?
Sure it could, but I think that the path there is more, again, like I was talking about yesterday, you know, hope is more the path than strategy. Not that Barry Trotz should be sitting on his hands. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, yeah, it can happen. but a bunch of things have to kind of go the other way, and players individually and collectively, I mean, have to just play better. I don't have a magic wand other than I understand that Saros was not supported the way you need to support a goalie, but he needs to be way better. He needs to play like he's played at his best. Stamkos, who, you know, you started to see, you know, he had stretches last year, but Stamkos, Marchso, and then, you know, some of these other guys too, like a guy like Evangelista, you know, you thought he was on a certain trajectory after the previous year with the team that made the playoffs that we didn't expect to make the playoffs. And then that got disrupted. And then you go through all this stuff, and this is where it would be easier to imagine these things had they made a coaching change.
Yeah.
Not making the coaching change, you know, it does feel a little bit like the whole, you know, keep banging your head on the wall and expect like a different result. I think I just mixed up two like sayings, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So is it possible? Yeah. But like a lot of it really is just like, I mean, look, we played the clip yesterday, Trotz talking about, you know, like the chip on the shoulder. It's such a cliche. But, man, you sure as heck hope that's part of, like, the story of this team is that this summer everybody is so driven that they have incredible summers. You can have an amazing summer, great summer, good summer, okay summer as a player in any pro sport, you know, to get ready. And there's still a limitation on what that means. It's still about these guys collectively playing much better together in this system or whatever, you know, this however it changes, you know. But I think that's it. Yeah, Trotz needs to do something to change the math. He's not going to change it that much. It's still going to be mostly these same guys and hoping that they play better.
To me, Joe, there are four things that absolutely have to happen if this is going to be the case. If they're going to be an actual threat next year. And I'll lay those out real quickly, and you can tell me if you believe at all that this is realistic. Number one, you need improvement from everybody on the roster. Everybody's got to have a better year than they had last year, right? Now, some of that's going to happen naturally. Like, there are some guys that were so off last year that I think they're probably going to naturally course correct. But, you know, really that question comes down to, all right, how much better, even with a year older, do you think Steven Stamkos can be in year two with the Predators and not going through?
Those would have to be answered emphatically, but the fourth one in particular would have to be like a whoa revelation ad down the middle.
Well, and look,
had since they traded for Ryan Johansson.
Exactly. And like it would probably, frankly, as much as I like Ryan Johansson probably does not get enough credit early in his Predators career for how good he was and how much that changed things around here. But, like, frankly, it would probably take a bigger level player than that. Like, that's where they're at with their roster right now. Now, the one thing I'm leaving the door open for, and we'll see, and there are, you know, Elliot Friedman's talked about this. We had Sean Rourke on yesterday. There are a lot of people that think from now until basically the draft and the first day of free agency that it could be mass chaos in the NHL because of everybody knows the cap's going up. There's some offer sheet possibility last year. So there's number three. There's some surgery needed to the defense corps, and I think they may have to make some tough choices about who's going to be a part of the defense corps moving forward and who's not. Like, you know, Delgazzo, Stastny, Willsby, like all those guys can't be there. Like there's Molendijk you got to consider. You can't have all of them. So you got to make some decisions this offseason as to who's a part of your defense corps and who's not, and I would say at least one, probably two, need to come from outside the organization that are not currently here. So that's number three. And number four, which is the hardest one, they got to get some legitimate help at center. They have to get legitimate help at the center ice position. And Joe, as we know, that is the hardest possible thing to do in the NHL. It's very difficult to acquire them. Usually if you do acquire them, it's because either things aren't working out where they currently are, and you're, you know, taking a huge risk at that point. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. Or maybe you get lucky and somebody just gets really mad about their situation this offseason and forces their way out, and you could take advantage of it. But to me, Joe, those are the four things that have to happen. You got to get improved play from your key guys. The goaltender's got to get way better. you got to revamp the defense corps a little bit, and there's got to be at least one centerman brought in that's a legitimate player. And I just – that seems like an awful lot of things to happen in one offseason.
Yeah, and I think the first three are all absolutely – they're realistic. It's not crazy. Is all that going to happen together? Some things can kind of help each other a little bit with this, you know. If this happens and it's a little easier for this to happen, like a circular, you know, like some flow chart. But, yeah, the fourth thing is that's where it's like, I don't know. I agree. You're right. But that one is on the realistic scale, that's the one that's a little bit more of a just an unknown and kind of got to see it materialize. I'm sure, you know, Barry Trotz has probably gone through every possible, you know, iteration, every possible scenario where he can make that happen. There's no question it has to happen. You know, if they don't do, if the first three things happen, and they don't figure out the last thing, and they're just deficient there down the middle. Could they still be a playoff team?
Yes. If the first three things happen, I think they can get back into the playoffs. But again, I think the team we just saw win it again is another great example of this. Like, you have to have high level players down the middle. You have to. And Ryan O'Reilly's been a great player throughout his career. Ryan O'Reilly at this stage of his career is probably a really, really, really good third-line center or maybe a second-line center. That's what he is right now. And it's just – it's hard to – if you're talking about winning a championship or not even win, but competing for a championship and being a legitimate threat, you got to have it down the middle. You just have to in today's game.
Yeah, and when Barry Trotz signed Ryan O'Reilly, he talked about this is what he is right now, and he's a guy who can, at some point, downshift. But so that's the idea. This is exactly when he would be doing that. The problem is, I think Barry Trotz thought there'd be some answers in front of him, and there aren't. So that's where it's challenging. You know, Joel from Woodbury, not sure if he's serious, but he says today is day one of the Preds' ultimate goal, tank for Gavin McKenna.
Yeah.
Who is the likely number one pick next year? I wouldn't look for that, Joel. Now, if they have another unintentional tank like last year, then boy,
yeah,
gonna get interesting around here. Let me tell you.
Well, and as you've seen, I mean, you could tank, and then it basically comes down to watching ping pong balls on TV and seeing if it falls your way, which it has not fallen your way ever in the history of your franchise.
Yeah. So good luck with that. Give it another shot. Wouldn't that be fun to go through another horrific year and then, you know, be counting on that?
Finish 31st and then end up picking fourth in the draft. That'd be good stuff coming up. I mean, you know, Ethan from Lawrenceburg says, geez, you don't wish for too much, do you, Robbie? He's like, I'm just trying to realistically lay out where I think they are right now in terms of, again, I'm not talking about getting back in the playoffs and just being happy to be there. I'm talking about how far away do I think they are for competing for a championship? What has to happen for them to get back there? And, Joe, I think that's it. Like, I think all those four things that are
– versus now, totally different, second-guessing, didn't first-guess. But like a Pettersson, you know? I mean, look, there are red flags and all that stuff. But, like, I think you have to – it may not be a perfect situation. You may have some misgivings if you come across something you could possibly do. But to me, I mean, I think you're at the point where you have to be aggressive and potentially gamble to make something of what you've done with this roster. Because, again, you're just not going to change it that much.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Preds to get to coming up next. Plus, if they don't improve much next year, where does this team, where does this franchise go after that? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Joe, we'll get to Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up here in just a few minutes, get his thoughts on the Predators and where things go from here. Joe, let's spin it the other way. We've talked about, you know, what has to happen for the Predators to get back to being competitive and how realistic is it. What if they're not next year? What if you get into next season and it becomes pretty clear that there's not much improvement that's happened, you know, beyond the status of the coach, which, you know, I would have to think if that's the case next year at some point, his time probably expires as Predators head coach. What do you do if you're ownership, if you're the front office, the players? How do the fans feel about it? What's the response if the Predators pretty clearly, we get into next season, Joe, and they are still clearly not a playoff team, and you're looking at the future and you're saying, all right, you just had a top five overall pick. Hopefully that guy comes in at some point and rescues it. But in the immediacy of it, Stamkos and Marchessault and Forsberg and Yossi and Saros and all these guys are still here. What do you do if you're just not at all competitive again next year, Joe?
Well, that's a real problem. And I know the, you know, the slappies in town, including one at this station, would say, well, let's just see if David Edstrom's good in a few years. You know, I'll just judge it on that. But look, I mean, I think at that point, the pressure has to be pretty high on Trotz. Obviously, it'll mean that this attempt didn't work. He has locked you into this goalie deal that probably isn't going to age well. It's going to be difficult to get out of. It's going to be painful to get out of. Again, like that's I guess, see, I'm already answering the question, and that's such an important singular aspect of it is, okay, even if it's not good next year, but do we see Saros look like Saros again? Like, do you have some hope with him? You know, it's almost like when we talk about the Titans, and it's like, yeah, they go 5-12 next year, but if Cam Ward's good, then, you know, you can still feel good about things. Like, is Saros playing the same way as this year part of it? Because if that's the case, man, then Barry Trotz has really screwed it up here. And that is the thing that we first guessed. We did, and a lot of people did. That was first guessed. The Stamkos and all these things, that was not, you know, that's second guessing right now, which, of course, we all do. But that was first guessed. And so I guess I'm throwing that back at you as a little bit of a, that's a huge part of it. If that's not any better, then, you know, look, I think Trotz's seat should start getting real warm. You know, it's been a short period of time, and he's a smart guy, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. But what are you looking at then? You know, maybe there are some promising guys in the farm system. There's going to be another one real soon who's going to be at the head of the list.
Yep.
So, you know, you have that, but boy, think about the gap in between these things. So how much pain are you talking about? You know, wow. How much are you willing to deal with? And maybe it's as simple as, you know, Trotz has signed on for, and when we are going to see after a few years, if some of these young players and prospects are actually good and he has a good eye for that. And if that's the case, then you can tolerate these mistakes early in terms of your current roster. But you're talking about several years then of waiting to see.
Well, that's the thing. To me, there is a scenario here where if they're not able to fix this offseason, that they could be at the bottom of the standings for a while, right? Like, if your current group of veterans doesn't fix it this year, I said it yesterday. They got a lot of 30-some-odd-year-olds, and recently they've had a lot of 21, 22, 23-year-olds come up. They are really, really light. Matter of fact, I don't know if they've really got any that are impactful 26, 27, 28-year-olds, right?
So, like, Novak is a guy who you would hope to be that guy right now.
Right.
And for example.
He wasn't, and now he's gone. So, like they don't really have that guy. Like, even, like, Brady Shea is 30. He'll be 31, and you hope that he's, you know, a stalwart back there moving forward. Saros, he's 30. So, like, they're pretty much non-existent when you start thinking about the 26, 27, 28-year-old really, really impactful players that they've got. So, when there's that much of a gap between the kind of the, both parts of your roster, like if the current veteran group either doesn't play better next year or they're not able to figure it out, and particularly what you said, if the goalie's not good again next year, like, you start to look at the future of the team and you say, all right, well, that, now you have to wait on all the young guys to come up before you can kind of evaluate what they are. And that could involve, I'm not saying it will, but it absolutely could involve two, three more years after that, Joe, where they're not very good as they're trying to build this thing. I guess what I'm saying is if they don't fix it this offseason, there is a conceivable scenario where they're not a playoff team for the next three, 4 years. And, you know, that would be unbelievably disappointing given the fact that when you signed Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea, the idea was, and we talked about this at the time, in their first 2 years, as they're getting older but still maybe, you know, able to produce at a high level in the first part of those contracts, you could really have a chance to compete. If they don't next year, there's absolutely a scenario where they're just not very good for about 3 or 4 years.
Right. And then the whole, hey, tank for this guy, tank for that guy. Well, you can start talking about it, you know. Whoever your top prospect is in a given year, hey, you're right in there. So enjoy that, because let me tell you something. You know, the Preds, obviously they had a great playoff streak. Yes, you know, it felt like the mushy middle, and it was like, you know, stop being just pretty good. You know, you got to be bad to be better, all that stuff. Well, the people who were saying that may finally get their wish, even though it wasn't the intent. A lot of reaction. I want to rip through a few quick ones on this. I got to sign Corey Perry. Like I said, I agree. If you're bad, you know, get Corey Perry. Preds wouldn't have a right D problem if they'd gotten rid of Fabro, or if they kept Fabro, which is an interesting one. You got to trade Saros Edmonton. I got a John Hines from Gunner would have taken this team farther. So there we go. Get some John Hines love. Mm. Cam says Troy Terry supposedly available.
He apparently is. We'll see. I mean, I don't know. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me from the Anaheim point, but again, he's not a centerman. Like they need a centerman, right? And I don't know. They're just those are really, really difficult to find. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on some of this with the Predators. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, the game.